Plan amendments, paper five.
Could I start? So agenda for paper five. The interpretations committee received a request to clarify the accounting treatment in IS 19 in the event of a plan amendment or curtailment. The committee discussed this issue at its May 2014 meeting. At that meeting, it tentatively agreed to develop an amendment to require an entity to take account of the remeasurement of the net defined benefit liability at the event date when determining net interest for the post-event period, and use the updated assumptions for the calculation of current service cost and net interest for the post-event period. We reaffirmed that benefits expected from our proposal are clear. It would provide more relevant information and enhance comparability and understandability. We noted that additional cost would not outweigh the expected benefits because of the existing requirement to remeasure the net defined benefit liability in IS 19 and IS 34. We are not proposing that an entity should perform valuations more frequently during the reporting period. We are proposing that an entity should consistently determine net interest and current service cost for the remaining period, utilizing the most recent remeasurement. If an entity remeasures net defined benefit liability during a period, because of a significant event, such as a plan amendment, curtailment, or settlement, and a significant change, such as market fluctuation. In addition, our proposal would not change paragraph 60 of IS 19, which implies that detailed computations described in IS 19 are not always necessary when estimates or shortcuts provide a reliable approximation. Consequently, we recommend an amendment to IS 19 as an item for annual improvement, as shown in Appendix A. Some wording in Appendix A could be refined, and amendment to related paragraphs, such as paragraph 125 of IS 19, could be considered when we draft a proposal with a basis for conclusions. We would like to ask whether the committee agree with the staff analysis and the recommendation.
Comments? Laurence?
I'm still okay with the outcome, but I wonder whether where we want to get at could be made more simply, because sometimes draft is using some new terminology that is not defined, such as current service period, and so on. In my view, basically what we are saying is that if there is a remeasurement of the net DBO during the period, be it because you have a curtailment, a settlement, be it because you have a significant market fluctuation during the year, be it because the entity decides to remeasure during the year, because the entity is allowed to remeasure during the year. In that case, going forward to determine current service costs and net interest, you just use the assumptions you have used to determine the net DBO at the remeasurement date, at the date when you did the remeasurement. Can we just write that simply?
Yeah, take your point. We may have used 20 words to say what three would have done.
Yeah. Plus the fact that I would like to see the basis for conclusions amended, in particular paragraph 58 and paragraph 64, which were the ones causing the problems.
Okay, let's just work down the line here. We'll start with Kaz, Michael, Bonnie.
I have a significant concern about this proposal. I understand the staff analysis and staff paper, and the last time I kind of addressed that concern of the cost and benefit, and I appreciate staff is aware, and I think that Interpretation Committee's members is also understand that. But looking at the proposed wording of the amendment, that can lead to do more work. I mean, frequent remeasurement and every quarter change of the assumptions. And I just want to highlight this original, the service costs or interest should be determined at the beginning of the financial year. And if, and only if significant events like curtailment and all those things, or significant market change happens, we should remeasure. So I think that notion concept, whether you agree with that, that should be articulated properly. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, looking at this, whenever we do or prepare to do remeasurement, should we change the assumption? It could be the case, particularly in the significant market change happens, interest rate, discount rate change, and we change the DBO, but the, looking at the P&L impact is not significant. So it could be we can continue to use the original interest rate. That could be the case. If we look at this proposal, I don't see that. Every time we do the measurement, we need to use that assumption. Technically, it could be the case, but I don't think this is consistent with the principle of I-34 paragraph, because this is an exception of that consistency of the I-34. So as long as it's a significant event happens and it is a significant impact, in including that the P&L as well, we just need to change. So those kind of intention, I think that is, as long as that is agreed, that should be articulated in this amendment.
If I can just check that I've understood it correctly, your first point was that this amendment shouldn't change the frequency of measurement that is required by the standard, and that's absolutely correct. This is just clarifying what you do when you do have the remeasurement triggered. So if we need to do something more, perhaps on the basis to explain that, we can make that clear. The second point, though, I didn't quite follow, unless it was...
I just want to make sure that even we do remeasurement,
yes,
another judgment needs to be kicked in to use that that financial assumption to the, for the following interim period. Because maybe, but for example, if we see original discount rate is 2% and interest rate becomes lower to 1.5%, and we measure that the DBO, and for the following quarter, I guess, reading this proposal, we need to use 1.5%, but considering the impact of that interest rate change to the net interest, because net interest is just a net of the asset and liability, could be no impact, well, less impact. So in that case, should we continue to use 2% or should we change 1.5%?
Are you concerned about that there may be an a not very significant impact of having to change to the new interest rate.
Yes. Okay. It is a significant impact to the balance sheet.
Yes.
But not necessarily in the P&L. That could be the case.
And I wonder whether you might be covered there by one of two things. One being the normal materiality aspect, which you know would cover you, or potentially the guidance that Akemi referred to in terms of the pragmatic approach that IAS 19 allows in certain
yes,
circumstances.
I understand that, but yes. I couldn't read in that way. Because whenever we look at that paragraph 67 and even 123, every time we do remeasurement, we need to use the new assumption. That's what it's, to me, it's written. Mm.
In terms of cost, recognizing everybody's desire, and I think Manuel raised this at the last meeting. Nobody wanted to require a remeasurement at every quarter. We knew that, and that was the board's intention, clear intention. But as I recall, the approach that we looked at that we thought the standard required was actually worse and might even be more burdensome than doing a remeasurement, except potentially in the context of volatility, but certainly in terms of the cost. I thought we said that the alternative was uglier. Let's keep that on. I have Michael, Bonnie, Tony, Fei Long, Andrew, Martin, and then all the way back around to John. Michael?
Yes, I have much the same concern, so to speak. I think that the IAS 19 is designed and is to see that you have a true balance, which you could argue with the corridor method and so on, but a true balance in the balance sheet, and then you have an easier, so to speak, approach on the cost side, where you try to allocate a reasonable cost to this year. And then we have the concept of measuring all changes in those assumptions into OCI if there are any changes there. And obviously we have totally different, I think, materiality when we change some assumption in the balance sheet than we would have in the income statement for that period in time. So I think that is not, so to speak, part of the concept from the beginning of the IAS 19. And then if you go the next step and talk about having the same result in regardless of the number of statements during the year, closing during the year that you present, and then obviously due to the fact that you are taking the historical cost in the OCI, you will not end up in the same result if you make then quarterly or 6 months report then when you change the discount rates in different times here. And then I understood from the text here that potentially that was then to say that no, we should remeasure every month or every week or so, because we should end up in the same result anyway, regardless of the number of issues of quarterly or quarterly reports. But it will not be, if you just have the official dates, you will not end up in the same result if you change the profit and loss.
I would not have reached that conclusion.
I don't think that's what it says at all.
Tony, you want to jump in on that?
I don't think that the periods in which you report would have any impact at all based on the accounting that the staff has proposed, because the staff is suggesting that when you are required to remeasure the defined benefit obligation as a result of a settlement, a curtailment, or a plan amendment, you are required to do that by the standard. So it's the event of having a curtailment, an amendment, or a settlement that triggers the remeasurement of the DBO. And all the staff is saying is once you've remeasured the DBO, the accounting would be inconsistent and anomalous if you didn't change the actuarial assumptions. So my sense of it is it doesn't add any cost because IAS 19 already requires the remeasurement. It produces accounting that is more sensible because you don't end up hypothetically with a finance cost where there is no liability that reverses out through OCI at the end of the year, which would be inconsistent. And again, my sense is that you would just apply the normal rules around materiality to decide whether or not the impact of the adjustment was big enough. I don't think we want to get into writing something in each standard that says you don't do it if it's not material. I share a couple of Laurence's concerns. I think the words could be clarified to be very explicit that this is only being required as a result of an amendment, a settlement, a curtailment, basically to make it consistent with when you do it in under IS 34. But otherwise, I think the staff's on the right track. I do think the basis needs to be revised because it's BC 64 that's caused all the problems in the first place.
But yes, I agree fully when it comes to a curtailment. Mm-hmm. I mean, then obviously that is, takes place when you do a curtailment and you do it prospectively. But if you say that that goes also for a remeasurement when you change the discount rate, then you would have the previous quarter's deviations into CI and prospectively you will use the new discount rate. So depending when you enter into the new discount rate during the year, you would have different results.
But you're only required, if you think about 34, to do that when there's a significant market fluctuation. And so the standard already says that you do that. I don't think this is imposing an extra burden
on anybody. And as I said, I mean, in the balance sheet, as you said, the balance sheet, it will have a material impact. But it will probably not have an impact on the profit and loss.
In which case, there's no need to account for it. I'm not sure we need, if you like, specific guidance to say don't do this if it's not material.
Let's see if we can get a couple more voices in here. Bonnie?
So I would agree with what the staff is recommending. I also think that it is much more beneficial to properly request a cost in the P&L, especially in the event of a curtailment or a settlement. I think it better reflects the requirements under IS 34. What the comment that I particularly had was in relation to the cost to the entity. Even though there is a remeasurement of the assets and the liabilities at that point in time, unless the actuaries are asked to recalculate the service cost, that is something that not necessarily the entity might have done. And it will create additional effort and cost on the side of the preparer to go back and recalculate that information. Because previously you would have used the service cost and the net interest cost that would have been calculated as of the end of the prior year remeasurement. So there is some incremental effort on the side of the entity that, depending on the number of plans, the complexity of plans, that especially in the United States there are quite a few, then that could be additional cost to the entity. Maybe one more comment that I would have is, in agreeing with this, I also think that it, in this particular specific instance, eliminates a difference between U.S. GAAP and IFRS, which I think is good.
Okay. Oh, Fei Long.
I'm okay with the staff recommendation, but I have the same concern about the cost of the updating service cost on there. It will definitely lead to additional cost. But whether it is significant or will depend on the how frequency. But it looks like not clear enough when the updating need to be done, especially in the significant fluctuation and the definition of the significant.
Okay. Andrew?
I also agree with the staff analysis and recommendation. Just picking up on a couple of the drafting related comments, I agree that BC 64 of IS 19 needs to be addressed. But where this gets us to is it says IS 19 provides triggers for remeasurement, which are in paragraphs 58 and 99 of IS 19. And when those triggers are hit, we update our actuarial assumptions to determine service cost. So that becomes the principle. I think the IS 34 paragraph B9 needs to be looked at as well to make sure that that language isn't quite aligned with what IS 19 is going to say. So I just think the join between IS 34 and IS 19 needs to be looked at as part of the drafting process.
Martin?
In the first quarter or so, what is the prior period? And I guess, I mean, I'm in line with the overall philosophy, but we have probably look a little bit more careful at the definition and make really clear what we mean in this circumstance, so that we could overcome this. Tony, you spoke about amendment, settlement, and curtailment. I guess it is important to give the hint somewhere, probably in the basis for conclusions or wherever, that the net interest and so on are also affected when I have a significant contribution. We haven't. This was not real the topic here, but overall, it is more or less cross-related. And the last thing which we haven't considered is when we have more than one plan in a specific country and we do recalculation, so we have better insights in demographics and so on, and we have another plan without this amendment or whatever, whether we would update this plan with the better information as well. I would assume no, because it would, well, add additional costs. But I guess in practice, for sure, this situation would apply. And we should at least generate an idea what would it mean for other plans I have in this country where I have no significant amendment, settlement, curtailment, and so on. But while doing the new calculations, I also get new information for interest rate and so on. So should we more or less force the companies to be consistent with their plans within one country to have the same assumptions? Or might be, well, a lower situation where we say, okay, there was no significant change in 90% of all the plans, so therefore keep that constant, but adjust the plan where you had this significant amendment.
John?
Overall, I'm in favor of the direction. It was unclear to me, though. The paper talks about requiring this remeasurement where you have significant fluctuations in significant market fluctuations, which is identified in IAS 39, but nowhere in the amendment does it seem to me to pick up those. And I suppose I was unclear as to whether we were now proposing that IAS 19 should pick up remeasurement from the point forward where you have a significant market fluctuation. I would be concerned at that extension of the remeasurement requirements of IAS 19, and I would be more in favour of a remeasurement of it being limited to where there's curtailments, settlements, or plan amendments. I do think this idea of aligning with IAS 34's requirement is sort of a bit strange, because IAS 34's requirement is not really a remeasurement. It talks about the pension cost being consistent, except for where you have significant market fluctuations, and I don't think those notions are actually the same at all. Two other things. I think there's two other paragraphs. Paragraph 80 and paragraph 83 of IAS 19 both refer to at the end of the reporting period for determining your actuarial assumptions and determining your discount rate. Again, if IAS 19 is going to require that post a remeasurement event, you change those and remeasure at that date, there should be amendments to those paragraphs as well.
Okay. Bonnie, Bronch, Reinhardt, and then I'm going to ask a question.
So I guess I wanted to respond to some of the comments and maybe that Martin had regarding does this change when you would do a remeasurement, or how do you look at the plans within a specific country? I guess the way I read this was that the remeasurement continues to be on a plan-by-plan basis. You don't combine plans unless they're legally combined. You look at it still on a plan-by-plan basis, not on a country basis. So if there was a different intent here, which I did not read, but I can understand there might be a question, I have a significant issue with that, because to me it's a plan amendment or a curtailment can be on a plan, one plan within a country, and not extend to the rest of the plans. And if that is the interpretation, I think you're changing what's in IES 19 now, and that's a different question and a different issue in my mind.
Hold that one. Laurence?
After listening to everybody, this is why I think I'm suggesting the staff in the drafting to start from the basis to say, if there is a remeasurement of the net DBO, and we don't get too much into detail about what's the reason, but we know in the basis for conclusion that this may be because there is a curtailment, there is a settlement, or because you were at an interim period, and at the interim period you had a significant change, significant market fluctuations, which required you to adjust your discount rate. So if there is a remeasurement of the net DBO during a period going forward, you adjust the measurement of the current service costs and net interest using the assumptions that were used when you had the remeasurement. But don't try to define whether you should have a remeasurement, not have a remeasurement. I mean, the standard itself deals with it. You have that paragraph 58 that is the overall arcing says that an entity shall determine the net defined benefit liability asset with sufficient regularity that the amount recognized in financial statements do not differ materially from the amounts that will be determined at the end of the reporting period. Okay, that's there. And as I re-emphasize, an entity, if they wish so, can remeasure a defined benefit liability during the period, should they wish so. They are not prevented from doing so. They may not want to do so because it's costly, but they are not prevented from doing so. So I would just not try to figure out the reason for the remeasurement. I would just start from the point, if there is a remeasurement of the net DBO during the period, this is what you do, calculating current service cost and net interest.
Reinhardt?
I likewise agree with the staff's analysis and agree with many of the comments that were made here in terms of tightening the language. But just listening to the conversation, like John, I'm a little unclear as to the intent of whether this was to be restricted to circumstances where the remeasurement occurs as a result of a plan amendment, curtailment, et cetera, or for any remeasurement, including significant market fluctuations. And I thought the intent was the former, not the latter. But the confusion in my mind arose with the way paragraph 67, or proposed paragraph 67, is worded. It says, in the second to last sentence, if the present value of the DBO is remeasured in a reporting period, for example, as a consequence of a curtailment. So it seems to imply that any remeasurement, you would have to determine the current service costs using the revised assumptions. Again, I thought it was more along the lines of what Tony mentioned earlier, was only in the circumstance where there's a, you know, you've had the plan amendment, curtailment, or settlement, as opposed to any remeasurement.
My memory of how our conversation evolved, and I can be corrected on this, was we started out from events that were at the discretion of the employer. Amendments, curtailments. And we had a very narrow focus on that. Then late in the conversation, and I think, Tony, it was you who raised it, we got this idea of what I would call two standard deviation changes. So something big happened. It wasn't at the discretion of the employer, but that there was some other population of stuff that wasn't employer driven that we also wanted to be picking up. And Tony, if I've mischaracterized your view, please tell me. But I think we then expanded what we were talking about beyond a strictly employer-driven question. We didn't, to the best of my knowledge, then say, well, does that mean if I have six plans in Antarctica and only amended one of them, do I have to update for all six? And I don't think we ever got to that part of the conversation.
Indeed. Yeah, that's my recollection as well. That, and what we've tried to do here is to say that when a remeasurement is triggered by the standards, whether that is just the whether that is a curtailment amendment, or even when it is a significant market fluctuation, then this is what you do. We're not trying to say when you do the remeasurement, that's already set out, yeah. Just that when you do it, this is what you need to do, and that would apply to all remeasurements that are triggered by the standard, and it would and certainly our discussions were only about a particular plan where the remeasurement was triggered, so we certainly hadn't envisaged then going on further to say, well, if I've remeasured this plan in country A, I should also remeasure other plans in country A.
But if I have plans A through F, just to be absolutely sure I understand, I have plans A through F, I amended plan A, and that was what drove me to have to remeasure. None of the two standard deviation events exist, despite the fact that I would then have to bring in all new assumptions. I don't remeasure B through F.
No.
Okay.
I think it is plan by plan, and yeah, I said if you have to remeasure for whatever the reason, then the logic that we've gone through follows from that. And that's why I think Laurence's idea, we can think about the words, or Acme can think about the words, would make it clearer.
Well, I'm about to recruit a couple of volunteers on wording, but...
Laurence, you're the last word here.
Yeah, maybe one other problem is from the fact that when you have a settlement or things like that, paragraph 99 says, before determining past service costs, gain or loss on settlement, an entity shall remeasure the net defined benefit liability using current fair value, current actuarial assumptions. So it says you must do the calculation for determining the gain or loss. But it doesn't say you should book the liability based on the remeasurement.
Why would I bother?
Somewhere for the other half of that entry to go.
Yeah.
The requirement that debits equal credits is, pardon me saying, transcendental. But okay. I think we're in raging agreement on the direction. We're not in raging agreement on the wording, and I think the staff could use some help. I would agree with the comments that Kemi struggled greatly to deal with the wording, but I'd like 3 volunteers to help. And I'm looking at our new preparer members who have great experience in scar tissue in this department. Would one of you and maybe one or two others volunteer to help Akemi? Bonnie?
Since you blame me for it.
Andrew and Tony. Okay.
And we're still planning on this being an annual improvement.
Yes.
So, pardon my saying, it's not time sensitive.
It isn't. No. Okay.
All right.